Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man that knows that fortune tellers make a killing nowadays. Here is the captain.
Call me Old Swami. It's good to be seen. It's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
This week we are featuring Black Tuesday Grand Reserve 2020 by the incredible men and women over at the brewery. If you're looking for them online, that's spelled B-R-U-E-R-Y. This is a delicious triple barrel aged imperial stout with a whopping 22% ABV, so drink this at home in your garage. Garage grade, 4 out of 5 bottle caps, and a very special thank you to Thomas from Dallas, PA, for sending this beauty to us here at the garage.
A big shout out goes to Jennifer from Ravenna, Ohio.
Next up, Captain, we have Lena sending her love all the way from Sweden.
And a big we like your jib to Henry in New Rochelle, New York.
Next, we have Cheryl in West Columbia, Texas. And last but certainly not least, we have Audrey in Boone, North Carolina. Everybody we just mentioned went to truecrimegarage.com and they helped us fill up the fridge for this week's shows, and for that we thank you.
Yeah, BWRUN Beer Run. If you need more TCG for your earballs, check out our bonus show called Off the Record. It's on Stitcher Premium. You can find a link at our website at truecrimegarage.com, and that is enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
Directly to the killer, who may be in this room. Only a coward would do such a thing. What will those closest to you think of when they find out that you brutally murdered two little girls? Only a coward would do such a thing.
Don't give up.
We will not stop.
24 hours, of course, since they were reported missing. 13-year-old Liberty German Abigail Williams last seen around 1 o'clock Monday afternoon near the Monon High Bridge, that abandoned rail bridge just outside of Delphi. Now, News 18's Brad Oppenheim joins us now live from Carroll County, where that search continues at this hour. Brad?
Jeff, like you said, Liberty German and Abigail Williams were last seen yesterday afternoon when they were dropped off near that bridge. Now, they had made arrangements to be picked up by family members later that afternoon, but they never showed up. Now, a staging area has been set up at the Delphi Fire Department, and since I've been here, I've seen hundreds of people come in and out of this staging area. We are told that volunteers will be sent out in groups where they will comb the area in efforts to find these two girls. I was able to actually catch up with Abigail Williams' mother, Anna Williams, and she says she is amazed by the outpouring of support from the community. I also spoke with the Carroll County Sheriff, Tobe Lesenby, and he says they are working with officials on getting an Amber Alert issued. Just in the last couple hours, I have been at the staging area. I've seen and spoke from volunteers that don't even live in Carroll County, including one man from West Lafayette who came over and joined the search. He said he has a teenage daughter himself and wanted to do what he could to make sure those girls make it home safe.
Directly to the killer, who may be in this room. Only a coward would do such a thing. What will those closest to you think of when they find out that you brutally murdered two little girls? Only a coward would do such a thing.
Don't give up.
We will not stop.
We're here in the garage, me and the Colonel, talking with Skip Jansen about who he believes should be the number one person of interest. Skip, when did you start your investigation into the Delphi murders?
That's a good question. I've probably been looking into it for the last year or so. I guess I got into it because I thought it was, I was intrigued by the fact that there were audio and video of the killer. And I thought it was even more unique that one of the victims was the one who had done the video of him. So that's how I kind of got started looking into it.
And why do you think so many people on the internet have been fascinated with the Delphi murders?
Another good question. I think probably those reasons, as well as I think the small town aspect plays a part in it. And I think that the fact that, anytime two children are murdered, people have a fascination with that.
And for people that don't know, Delphi has a population of just under 3,000 individuals.
Yeah, very, very low populated area. And the unusual thing about it is for a town that has less than 3,000 people, I've never seen a case that had this many potential persons of interest.
Yeah, on the internet, there's hundreds of side-by-sides. But law enforcement has stated over and over in different press conferences that they believe the killer is local to Delphi.
Correct. I agree with that, if that's what you're asking. I think the area that the crime was committed in is such a remote area that the odds of this being someone who was from out of town or a random type murder, I think the odds are probably a little too long for that.
Yeah, I want to echo that, but I do want to point out that they have what their exact words are is that we believe that the person is local, someone either from Delphi, living in Delphi, or someone that works there. So not necessarily doesn't have to be an actual member of the Delphi proper population, according to those words and statements that have been released by law enforcement. But I do agree 100% with you, Skip and Captain. Given the nature of the crime scene and the Monon High Bridge and the trail system there, there are people that live in Delphi and live in Carroll County that I've spoken to or heard in interviews state that they didn't even know those trails existed or the bridge existed. So for some random person to just find that and use that as the killer used this as a hunting ground, whether he intended to kill someone there or not, he was hunting for prey for a victim or victims that day at that location. And given what I've seen and reviewed as far as maps go, I would like to go there and walk the terrain myself. But given the remoteness of that area and the lay of the land, somebody had to have familiarity with that location.
I agree with that. I think people get misled a little bit. Sometimes they'll look at Google Maps and see that one of the roads that the bridge is off of Highway 300, which is, it's just a little small, country two-lane road. And I think people think that that's maybe a larger, more traveled area, and it's just not.
So we have discussed many possible people of interest on the show and with arrests like Chadwell and so many other arrests throughout the country and people having side-by-sides. One thing that's tough with all those individuals, are they capable of committing the crimes? Yes. but can you put them in Delphi the day of the murders? But with your person of interest, you can actually put them at the park the day of the murders.
Yeah, that's right. He was there. He admitted he was there. He was there. He said he was with a female. He actually was the one of the witnesses for the original sketch that was released. Some people refer to as Old Bridge Guy. To answer that question, yes, he's the first one that I know of it that was admittedly there.
So your person of interest admits that he was there and also admits that he has talked to law enforcement and he came forward and he is the reason for the first sketch that has been released. Do you know if your person of interest was a part of any of the searches that day?
I don't know that he was part of any search. I just know that he was there around the time of the murders and he was in pretty close proximity to the area that where the girls were found.
So the girls went missing on February 13th, but their bodies weren't found till February 14th.
Yeah, that's correct, around noon on the 14th. So just to add a little clarity here in regards to the time frame that we're talking about February 13th, 2017. Now, Libby and Abby were dropped off approximately 1:45 in the afternoon. This is according to Kelsey, who dropped them off at the trailhead. And the Snapchat picture of Abby was posted at 2:07 p.m. on that day. And it's believed, based off of the evidence that we have, that being the still picture, which comes from the video, which was then released at a later date.
The still picture of Bridge Guy, yeah.
Correct. It due to the positioning of the sun, what we can see in that video, we can tell that the abduction took place between 2:20 p.m. and 2:40 p.m. that afternoon. So relatively quickly, things are moving very fast. The girls are dropped off and less than an hour later, they are abducted. Less than a half an hour later, that picture is posted on Snapchat of Abby. It's kind of mind-boggling how we have this perpetrator lurking, waiting in the shadows, if you will, looking for potential prey. And it just so happens to line up with about the time that they're dropped off. And from my understanding, Skip, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that it's approximately about a half mile from the trailhead to the bridge itself, which two girls taking their time, maybe they went a roundabout way. There's two different options to get you to that Monon High Bridge. That time lines up. All those times really line up with about how long it would take someone on foot to get to that bridge. And when you say that this guy, your guy, has admittedly, his own words, place him at the crime scene at about the same time that the abduction and murders took place. And I don't want to be clear, they're, even though they're murdered at that location and left there, they were abducted. I mean, they were moved and corralled and directed by the killer where to go. For
well,
what
we
reason?
Know that because we have audio evidence of that.
Correct. And we don't know for exactly what reasons, but you're saying this guy has placed himself there during this time frame. And the other thing that's key to hone in on at this point too, when we're discussing times on that day, is according to law enforcement, they believe whatever took place, because again, they're not telling us exactly what happened, whatever took place was done and over with probably relatively quickly, but at least by 5 p.m. that day.
Yeah, correct. Because that's the time frame that they say that the car was at the CPS building at the 2019 press conference. They led that off with that they were looking for the driver, which I thought was interesting, of the vehicle that was parked there from 12 to 5. I thought it was unusual they asked about the driver. It seems like maybe they know about who the vehicle is. And that's something that we can get into a little bit. But let me say a couple of things that I think are important. One thing I've learned is that law enforcement and a perpetrator have 180-degree opposite agendas. And I'm not talking about just the simple fact that law enforcement wants to catch this guy and this guy, that you know, the perpetrator doesn't want to be caught. How that relates to this case is, and it goes back to what you were talking about the time, is law enforcement wants to place somebody there between under that bridge near that crime scene between about 2:30 and 3:30 that afternoon. Okay. The perpetrator wants to be anywhere else but under that bridge between 2:30 and 3:30. Okay. And that's something I think that the listeners should keep in mind as we go along here, because there's been a ton of misinformation, deflections, false information put out. As we, again, as we talk about that, you'll see some of that. Maybe people change in their time frames of when they were there, who they were with, where they parked, and things like that.
Well, it's hard to know because we're not from that area. We don't know how popular this park is. It's a day where there's no school. How many people do you think are at the park during the time of the murders?
It's hard to say. I've identified maybe six or seven. I know there's been people who've said there were up to 50 people. I don't buy that at all. I think there were just a few. I've identified six or seven.
So people put the time frame of the murders in between 2:30 and let's say 3:30, but we know that because the girls weren't responding and somebody was trying to pick them up, and this miscommunication was started about 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I think Libby's dad, Derek, had arrived and started walking the trails around 3 o'clock, just after, and that was about the time they started realizing, you know, something was wrong.
Derek called Libby's phone at 3:11 that afternoon, and this is as he was getting close. He's driving in a vehicle to go pick up the girls. There was no set time when they were dropped off, what time they would be picked up. It was a roundabout time.
Right.
And the statement was, or always has been, that Derek would call Libby when he got close so they could meet him at the trailhead. And we know that that call took place at 3:11. He's unable to get a hold of her. She doesn't answer the phone. He then arrives shortly after that 3:11 phone call and starts to walk the trails looking for the girls.
I think one of the important things is that where he parked is an area called the Mears lot, which is the same place that the girls were dropped off. It's just a small area, private area, but the locals knew it as a place to, it had easy access to the trails. There's the trailhead, like you said, is right there. So it's just a short walk to the bridge.
And it's called the Mears lot because the Mears family farm is
right almost, across the street.
It's right across the street.
Yeah, and exactly.
They may have owned portions of that additional land at one time.
Right. And it's area that you can just get a few cars in at one time, three or four, five maybe max. So it's just a small area, but the locals knew about it.
One of the importance of this being a small location, and like you said, it could only fit maybe five cars, is that your person of interest claims that around 3 o'clock, his car would have been parked in that lot.
That's what time he said he arrived. Yeah. And he said he started walking slowly down the trail with a female.
But we haven't had any other eyewitness come forward and say that they saw your person of interest walking with this female. We haven't had anybody come forward and say that they saw them.
That's correct. Well, that's correct. Not anybody that that has said anything publicly. I do believe that he was seen later on, but no, nobody has publicly said they saw him. Nobody's corroborated that.
And what's also odd about this one claim that your person of interest made is the time frame. He would have run into possibly Derek or possibly flannel shirt guy at the trailhead around this time period.
Yeah, he, like I said, when Derek got there, he started walking on the trails. He ran into an older gentleman who's referred to as flannel shirt guy, and asked him if he had seen the two girls, and he said no, but there's a couple arguing under the bridge. So Derek took the other path, I guess, assuming that was not who he was looking for. So maybe the girls were on the other path.
One thing I've always wondered about here, Skip, is there's actually two bridges, right? There's one that goes over the Indiana Hoosier Highway. Yep. What's that? The Freedom Bridge?
Freedom Bridge, yes.
Part of me wonders when he gets told by FSG, flannel shirt guy, do you have his name in front of you? I think he's been identified. I think we can just say his name.
Yeah, his last name is McCain.
And McCain, he was in charge of the trail system there.
Correct.
So he's involved with the Parks and Rec or something of that nature. But so he speaks with McCain, and McCain says, I saw a couple arguing under the bridge.
I think you actually said I heard a couple arguing under the bridge.
And I'm with you. It could mean one of two things. Either he goes, okay, well, that's not the people I'm looking for, so I'll go this opposite way. Mm-hmm. Maybe he just assumed the Freedom Bridge rather than the Monon High Bridge.
It's possible that McCain was coming from that from that direction. So I think the assumption is that he had just been at the Monon High Bridge. Like I said, you know, he asked, you know, about two young girls. You know, somebody describing a couple they heard would not be the same description. So he said no, he hasn't seen them. So it you know, that part of it I think is fairly simple.
Well, in this case, there's so much information, and I think there's some misinformation that's being put out by certain people. And when you hear about this eyewitness, McCain, that talked with Derek at the trailhead, and he says that I heard an arguing couple roughly around 2:50 to 3 o'clock. To me, one of the things that people are missing is that would be roughly at the time that Abby and Libby are making contact with Bridge Guy. And we don't have the full audio tapes, so we don't know. And we don't know if those audio tapes have the evidence on there. Was there an argument? Did one of the girls start arguing with Bridge Guy? And if that is true, then around 3 o'clock, McCain did not hear an arguing couple. He heard Bridge Guy arguing with Abby and Libby.
Yeah, I think that's likely. I think, you know, one of the biggest questions that people have had in this case is, you know, why didn't anybody hear anything? You know, why didn't the girl scream? Why didn't anybody hear anything? Well, maybe they did. You know, maybe McCain heard something, but nobody's put that together like you just said. So
your person of interest, we know that he was there. He claims he was an eyewitness. He claims he's the reason for the first sketch that was released. He also claims that he enters the same parking lot that Derek parked in roughly about 3 o'clock. But then other times he has told sources and talked on the internet about being a part of the arguing couple, which would put him at the crime scene at 3 o'clock.
Correct. He also didn't come forward to law enforcement saying that he saw anybody. Like I mentioned, he was one of the witnesses to the first sketch until well after the video had been put out, at least a week. I think that kind of asked the question, you know, why did, if you saw somebody, he says he saw somebody dressed like BG was with a scarf over his face. If he saw somebody like that, why didn't you come, you know, and you know, two little girls were murdered that day. Why didn't you come forward immediately? You know, and he later recanted that statement.
Yeah, I have a couple problems with this person of interest. One, you're at the park roughly around the time that this family is looking for two missing girls. There's no witness that says he stayed to help. So what kind of person are you? What kind of canoe are you? I think our listeners know what I'm getting at. But on top of that, you're claiming that the day these girls were murdered, and you would have known that the next day, that you were at the park the same day these girls were murdered, and you saw a suspicious person. You're not coming forward to law enforcement for 7-8 days?
Well, he originally said he was with his girlfriend, okay? He later changed that to a girl that, and he never mentioned her name, just apparently one of the stories that was out there was that he was part of a cheating couple, so that was the reason for maybe why it was so ambiguous about who he was with, was because he was saying that he was trying to keep it on the down low that he was with another girl.
Well, and that's really interesting because this person of interest, he's coming forward and saying, look, I'm the eyewitness. I saw Bridge Guy. I am the reason for the first sketch that is released. We now know that law enforcement is saying, hey, that sketch is secondary. Essentially saying, well, we don't buy this eyewitness's account. At one point saying, well, I was at the parking lot roughly the same time Derek was there, but he didn't see me. And at some point I was with there with my girlfriend. Now we know that's not to be true. So then he has to then go on and then tell people, okay, look, I wasn't there with my girlfriend. I was cheating on my girlfriend. And so therefore, you know, but I was covering for that, which a lot of times eyewitnesses come forward and they lie to law enforcement and lie to the public because they were doing something bad. That necessarily doesn't make him a murderer, but my issue is we don't know who he claims he was with under that bridge. Key phrase there, under the bridge, which by definition, guys down the hill, under the bridge, anything under the bridge becomes a part of the crime scene. They found articles of clothing around that area under the bridge in the water. So we have this individual lying and constantly changing his story. But what does he do? He puts himself at that crime scene. And I don't believe anybody saw arguing couple. They just heard arguing couple then equals bridge guy arguing with Abby and Libby equals that's the murderer. And he is putting himself in that position, that location, arguing with somebody, which we believe would be Abby and Libby. And that puts him at the crime scene. That makes him bridge guy.
It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out everyone's most devious selves. And Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic game that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine's feeling a little drained. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. Have you ever thought about why your wireless bill is so damn expensive? It's all just radio waves. And how much can radio waves really cost? It seems like big wireless all got together and decided $100 a month. Now, thanks to Mint Mobile, you have a choice. For a limited time, all phone plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get premium wireless for just $15 a month. I love Mint Mobile. They have great quality. They have wonderful service. I love saving money. Put them together, and I'm getting great quality, great service, a wonderful phone plan for only $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG.
Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
So we're back talking with Skip Janis about his person of interest and how this person of interest has claimed he was eyewitness. He saw BG. He's the reason for the first sketch that was released, and that he was there with his girlfriend, then changed his story to that he was there with somebody he was cheating on his girlfriend with. Shows you the type of character this individual is. And on top of that, he just constantly keeps changing his story.
He said he saw Bridge Guy leaving, going toward Freedom Bridge around the same time that Flannel Shirt Guy and Derek would have been talking. So they would have had been close to each other in proximity to each other at the time. He said he saw him leaving there. He described him as, like I said, with the clothes that BG was wearing seen in the video, and also with a scarf over his face.
Again, I can't get over the fact that if you're just a normal guy, and maybe you don't want to come forward right away because you're going to be caught cheating, but you can tell law enforcement that, and they don't have to release that information to the public, but you can tell your friends, family, and girlfriend, hey, by the way, I was there that day. Well, why were you there? Oh, well, I was taking a lunch break, or whatever reason you have to come up with to tell your friends and family. But you believe that you saw this individual and you're waiting 7 days to come and talk to law enforcement. It just seems very suspicious. It seems very shady. It doesn't, you know, pass the sniff test, if you will.
Well, he said he came forward after the video had been released and said, that's the guy I saw that day.
Yeah. So when exactly is this photo or video released after the crime?
They released the video, I think, 2 or 3 days after the murders, or the photo taken
there's
from the
still
video.
Photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. The still photo was released a few days afterwards. It wasn't until that 2019 press conference that we get the video.
Right. And let's be clear about one thing. The younger sketch, the second sketch that was released in 2019, was actually created 3 or 4 days after the murders. That was actually the first, the old Bridge Guy sketch was not released until July of 2017. So it was 5 months before the first sketch was released, yet they had the sketch of the younger guy 3 or 4 days after the murders.
So the second sketch that was released, they had pretty quickly, but for some reason, this eyewitness comes forward 7 or 8 days after the murders, gives his account, and they go with his sketch.
At least, yeah. A week later, saying that that was the guy. It came after the picture was, or the photo was shown on television. Right. He said, that's the guy I saw. Again, I'm just curious why you wouldn't come, if you saw a suspicious guy there close to where two girls were killed, why you wouldn't come forward immediately.
Let's pretend that DP is Bridge Guy for a minute.
Okay.
He's coming forward now because he has an out. That sketch is his out, right? He doesn't want to come forward before, like you were getting to, that, oh, I don't want to come forward because they can identify me if I was there.
Right.
And so he sees the sketch. It's not, doesn't appear to be him to him. So DP comes forward and says, yep, I would like to second that. I saw that person. I was there that day and saw that person there as well.
He saw the video. He saw the video, or the photo, not the sketch. I think he became aware of the sketch. I've spoken with a person, friend of mine locally, whose family has a brother who's in law enforcement that I think is an incredible source. And he told me that a lot of local people knew about this. There was a second sketch. They didn't know what it looked like, obviously, early on, but they knew very early on that there was a second sketch. I think how the timing works is he came after the second sketch had been created hadn't been released yet, but the second sketch had been created, and that's when he came forward.
The second sketch that was actually released is actually the first sketch that they created.
Correct.
But how is law enforcement getting that information for the second sketch that was released?
From a witness. A witness that saw something that needed to be reported that day.
And Skip, correct me if I'm wrong. It's been my understanding that the second sketch released is based off of eyewitness statements, description.
Right.
And the first sketch that was released was based off of the still photo, then later video evidence.
And it was all, well, a lot of people believe that the law enforcement's take on it is that it was created by multiple witnesses.
Okay.
So both the sketches, or law enforcement says both of the sketches were created based on witness testimony. I agree with you, though. I think that the first sketch had the photo and video had some influence on it.
And your person of interest, which we are calling DP, I don't know if you guys picked up on the fact that Nick called the person of interest DP. We're calling him DP for legal reasons, obviously, and for safety reasons for himself. But he came forward and was telling people online he was responsible for the first sketch that was released.
That's correct. Yeah, again, I think that's a little bit unusual that, you know, law enforcement usually insists that the witnesses don't say anything in cases like this. He certainly injected himself into the case by speaking on social media, kind of getting his story out there.
But both of his stories put him with another person at the trails that day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So where's this other person, right? I mean, if I'm law enforcement, that's my first thing. I'm going, okay, DP was there. And in story A, he's with so-and-so. And in story B, he's with someone else. Who are these people and do they exist?
Well, again, I think the reason for the change of the story was that he was with another girl and didn't want that information getting out. I think that was the excuse to get to the second story, which was the cheating girl. Yeah, I think that probably raised a red flag of some sorts, you know, but he was considered a witness. They thought that, you know, law enforcement seeks witnesses. They know they need witnesses. And this guy came forward voluntarily. So they assumed he was, said he and described something that looked like what they were seeing on video. So they had no reason not to believe him.
Okay, so this DP guy's there, and he's with this girl that he's cheating on his girlfriend with. I mean, that's pretty scumbag anyways, but we don't have this other girl that he was cheating on his girlfriend with coming forward and saying, hey, I was there with DP. And the other thing about it, too, is he's saying he was arguing with this girl that he was with under the bridge, again, putting himself and putting whoever this girl he was with, if there was even a girl there with him, under the bridge. Again, under the bridge. You have to understand that under the bridge or on the other side of the bridge is all a part of the crime scene. So he would be saying, not only was I cheating with this girl, but she was over at the crime scene with me about the same time that the killer would have been making contact with Abby and Libby, but yet they didn't see anything.
Again, he wasn't seen by anybody except one person, a girl named Cheyenne Ingalls, and she's the only one there that has corroborated seeing him.
Do we know where Cheyenne says she saw?
She never said exactly where she saw him. She said that her story, and I'll be kind of frank here, I haven't found anything that she said to be truthful. She originally said she got there at 3:50, changed her story to she got there at 2:50. She showed a picture of from the day, says that she said she went there to take pictures. She shows a picture and is taken around 3:00 of the bridge. She never said, you know, she saw what time she saw him, just that she saw a heterosexual couple and also ran into a friend of hers who she said she didn't know was going to be there.
Well, the biggest point about DP being a person of interest is that he was at the park that day, claims to be in the vicinity of the bridge and has changed his story multiple times. Now you have Cheyenne that is eyewitness to DP being there, but she's constantly changing her story as well. It's very, very suspicious.
I think there are four people involved in that equation. I think DP, Cheyenne, Cheryl and a girl named Shelby. And I think that one of them has something to do with a car that was parked at the CPS building that law enforcement inquired about.
So who is this Shelby?
She's a friend of they're all friends. I know she went to law enforcement to tell them kind of straighten out the vehicle situation. I think there was a lot of confusion about where everybody parked, what time everybody got there, whose cars were there. I think she went and told them that, you know, her car was there, and here's how it got there. I think, again, nobody saw her. Nobody saw DP. I don't have any reason to believe she was there because, you know, there's nobody corroborating the story that she was there. I'm not sure she ever said she was there. Yeah, she and Cheyenne are friends because they were married to, well, one was married to two brothers. One was married and one was had a child with the other brother. So they were friends that way.
But does Cheyenne ever say when she saw Cheryl?
She says that Cheryl got there. Cheyenne says she got there about 2:50. She said that Cheryl got there about 2:30. She didn't say exactly what point she ran into him. Or ran into her, I'm sorry.
So we're going to exclude Shelby because we don't believe that she was there. But other than Cheyenne and Cheryl, do we have anybody?
We don't know that Cheryl was there either.
Right. But do we have anybody at the park seeing DP that day?
No. Nobody saw DP except Cheyenne. Okay. But nobody saw Cheyenne. Nobody saw Cheryl. Nobody saw Shelby. They all were there at the park in the same time frame that several other people were there, including FSG, but nobody saw any of them. I think, again, I think the timeline and the vehicles are the critical part of the case. I think it's likely law enforcement knows or has a particular POI, person of interest, and I think that was probably gathered from those two things. The timelines never made sense amongst any of the witnesses or any of the people that were there, and neither has the vehicle situation.
So you're telling me that Cheyenne says, I saw DP at the park, but we don't know what time she's claiming she saw him. Is she saying that he was with somebody or alone?
She was saying he was with somebody. That was part of they were part of the heterosexual couple, as how she described it.
But the person that she's saying he was with is this person X.
Yes.
That's what makes this person so interesting to me, is because none of the stories line up. None of the stories make any sense. So if you're having a hard time following the story, well, don't blame you because their stories just don't line up. But Cheyenne also said that she saw DP's car in which parking lot?
It was parked, I believe, at the Mears lot.
But there's another eyewitness that disputes this claim.
Yeah, there was an eyewitness that drove by around 3 o'clock and said that she only saw two cars. If all the people who were there say they were there, or all the people that say they were there actually were there, then there would be a lot more than two cars. Because we know FSG was there and possibly parked there.
We know Derek was parked there.
Yeah, and Derek got there and parked there around just after 3 o'clock. So,
and it's not clear even where Cheyenne parked.
Right. Yeah, it's in...
There's reason to question that if she was even there that day.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, she says she leaves at 4 o'clock. And as she's leaving, she notices a man who she later finds or realizes is Derek sitting in the parking lot with another person in the car doing what looks like a drug deal. Well, Derek wasn't with anybody that day. Okay. Tara later came. And but she didn't arrive till 4:10. So how did Cheyenne see anybody in the car? As a matter of fact, when Tara got there, she says that Derek jumped in the car with her. So how did Cheyenne see Derek doing what looked like a drug deal at 4 o'clock?
It's possible that her time frame is just off.
Right, you know, but he got in the other car.
Did she identify Derek as being Derek or just some guy?
She said originally. She changed it later on to realize when she realized it was Derek, or is that the way she put it? She changed it. She said it was Derek.
I mean, come on, people. How many times are you going to keep changing your story?
Again, that just goes to part of the stories and how they've changed. I understand people's recollection, but a lot of this seems a lot more than that, than just, you know, misinterpreting times and things like that. She, the reason, you know, she knew she got there because at 2:50, because she remembers a robocall she got, and she remembers leaving at 4 o'clock because she didn't have good enough cell service to upload the picture to Snapchat that she took. And she did that about 10 minutes before four. So she knew her times were right, or at least she said she knew her times were right.
Well, and this is a small town, and I think some of this information was getting leaked, or at least some rumors were happening. It sounds to me like Cheyenne is having one story, and then once she finds out, well, no, Derek was in that area at that time, then she comes back and goes, oh, it just wasn't some man that I saw. It was Derek. Again, we have an eyewitness that is changing his story, that puts himself at the scene of the crime, roughly around the time of the murders, doesn't come forward right away, knows the girls. I believe at some point people said he was following one of them on Facebook, possibly could have been following them on Snapchat, said that he rode the bus with them, that they lived, you know, a couple miles away, so he knew the victims. But again, their stories keep changing, and how suspicious is that? Then Cheyenne says that she sees DP's car at the other parking lot, but it seems like he would have been parked at the CPS building and waiting for the girls.
I think it's possible, yeah. And I think if you go by what law enforcement says, that the car parked at the CPS building could have possibly been there from as early as 12 o'clock. I think it seems likely. I don't think the 12 to 5, I think that's just giving them some leeway, but I think they know that he was probably there longer than what he said.
So DP is changing his story constantly. Cheyenne is changing her story. She is the only one that claims to see his car there. We have other credible eyewitnesses that don't see his car. So that's very suspicious. Why would you be driving somebody else's car to the park that day? Maybe because you didn't want your car to be seen, because maybe you're going to do something bad.
Possibly. Again, that goes back to, you know, law enforcement saying in the 2019 press conference that they were looking for the driver of a vehicle. Mm-hmm. That tells me it's likely that it was whoever they're trying to find information of was driving a vehicle that wasn't his, a borrowed vehicle.
But we also believe that there was an eyewitness that would have saw the driver of that vehicle.
Yeah, I think that obviously there was a witness that saw. There was a witness that saw somebody that ends up being the second sketch. I think there's a possibility that witness is the same person who saw the car as BG was exiting the park.
Now, even though sketch one and sketch two, they're worlds apart, but there are some similarities. But your person of interest, DP, matches both of these, which is very concerning. And the second sketch that was released of the younger individual, he matches that sketch more than any other person of interest I've seen match a sketch. Now, hopefully that gets out to the internet and people can make their own predictions and own assumptions on that.
Well, let me ask you this. If, like we mentioned earlier, that a lot of locals knew that there was a second sketch early on, if you'd killed two people and you had gotten wind that there was another sketch out there,
and I mean, not you obviously, just a photo. You
this at this point, I'm talking about the sketch being done 3 or 4 days later because he didn't come forward till after that. You got
no,
wind
no.
That
what I'm saying is, if you killed somebody and you found out law enforcement didn't just have this photo that they released, but they also have a sketch.
Yeah, what you're exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You would think you had been seen, right? I mean, so that's certainly an incentive to come forward, to explain your whereabouts and why you were there that day. You waited a week to come forward, or at least a week. Why did you do that? First of all. And secondly, is that the reason? You know, law enforcement has thought that this person is following the case and getting information. You want to know what we know. And so I think it's likely that somebody was sharing information with him, or he had access to that. And that's why he came forward.
Well, and you also, after you're doing a lot of your research and you're looking into DP, you notice that a lot of the comments that the police officers are making or law enforcement is making about their suspect or when they're talking to the killer, that it really applies to the research and the misinformation that they got from these eyewitnesses early on. They talk about, we believe that we were lied to early on, or that we didn't identify this person correctly. And so to have the confidence that he had to go into law enforcement and say, hey, look, I was there. I was an eyewitness. I saw BG. And I think the small town of component comes in here because they believed him, because they said, well, look at him, look at his family, and look at what they've done in the community. This is a kid that we can trust. And I think they bought whatever story he was selling initially. We want to hear from you. Check out the blog at truecrimegarage.com. So much more to get to in the next episode. Please join us. And until then,
be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.